Well, we have 9 more holes to go, so how about you two fellas follow me to the 10th tee?
On to the back nine, hour number 2 of Real Golf Radio with Brian Taylor and Bob Casper, son of Hall of Famer Billy Casper.
2 players down the middle on the 10th hole.
Here's Brian and Bob.
Well, thank you very much. And, of course, not only Hall of Famer Billy Casper, 1970 Masters champion Billy Casper, Bob Casper's father, which is pretty cool. The history and the tradition that Bob's had an opportunity to be a part of throughout his entire life with his dad winning back in 1970 is awesome. And then bringing me into it back in 2000 was pretty dang cool as well. And I always appreciate that because it's such a cool week. It's such a cool week out there, and it was fun to run into some friends that had a chance to experience it for the first time. And isn't it great, Bob, when you get a chance to see the first-timers just with their eyes are just like saucers. They just can't even believe what they're seeing, finally getting a chance to experience what they've seen on TV and admired for so long, huh?
Yeah, it's amazing. And I've always told the story about my dad's friend, an Italian friend, who always was very animated about things. And when he walked out there for the first time, behind the clubhouse, and he looked at the golf course, he just started crying. And that's the way it is. That's the way it is when you get there. Because if you've never been before, no matter what happens, it can't possibly live up to what it actually is. And yeah, it's amazing to see first timers and their feelings about the golf tournament.
I'll tell you what I'm interested to see going forward is what kind of an experience does this new map and flag provide for people at the Masters. You got to check that out if you maybe heard a little bit about it, but it's basically it's official Masters hospitality. And so they've got outside the grounds, I should say. They've had hospitality inside, but outside the grounds. So you can get tickets to come in, but you also have all this hospitality. There's a lot of replicated stuff out there and your own gift shop and restaurants and the umbrellas just like behind the clubhouse. Really cool stuff. I didn't get a chance to see the actual facility, but man, maybe we'll get a chance to. Remember when Berkman's place opened, they kind of circulated some tickets throughout the media and we were able to go over there and experience that, which is, that was amazing. And the replica putting green there and just the experiences off the charts. Augusta knows how to do it. They do it right every single year, whether you're just there on a patron badge or as a media member, a player family. And by the way, player family news, as we talked about last week, coming next year is their underground parking, a new gym is what we're hearing. And we'll find out more announcements.
3-story family facility.
The chairman's announcement or a press conference next year will be something for sure. Hey, when we come back, we will continue talking Masters. It's all things Masters recap. The 88th edition. We'll continue doing it next right here. You're listening to Brian and Bob on Real Golf Radio.
Now, back to Real Golf Radio with Brian Taylor and Bob Casper.
You're listening to Real Golf Radio. Brian Taylor, Bob Casper, son of 1970 Masters champion Billy Casper. I love saying that, the weeks of the Masters. I mean, why not? He did win 51 times. He's a Hall of Famer. He's a successful Ryder Cup captain. He's the all-time winningest U.S. Ryder Cup player. I mean, he's got a lot of accolades. He's a 2-time U.S. Open champion, and we'll be talking about that here pretty soon. But for this week, the weeks leading into the Masters and out of the Masters, it's 1970 Masters champion Billy Casper, which is so, so cool. Scottie Scheffler, what a week he had. Here's what he had to say when he got into the press room.
It's been a long week, a grind of a week. The golf course was so challenging, and to be sitting here wearing this jacket again and getting to take it home is extremely special.
Yeah, it's really special, and he put on a special kind of performance out there as the number one player in the world. Jeff Babineau will join us coming up later this hour to talk more about his performance, but pretty impressive stuff there from Scotty. And then, hey, what do you do after you've dined with the members and celebrated and done your interviews and pictures in the jacket and the trophy and all of that? Well, you fly home and go to a dive bar with your wife and buddies, huh? Did you see that? I mean, he's in this bar Sunday night, 1:30 in the morning. They stayed for about a half an hour, took some pictures, had a drink, and went home and went to bed. So,
my goodness,
that's pretty much how he celebrated. And the guys, of course, at the bar couldn't have been happier to see the man who just walked in with the green jacket. That's pretty cool stuff. He's just the most down to earth kind of guy, and it's just hard not to like. That's what people. The comments I've gotten since I've gotten home is Scottie Scheffler is just so hard. How do you not like that guy? You know, he's just so easy to like, right? So
yeah, exactly.
He's one of us, as they say.
Yeah, he just tells it like it is. He tells it about his faith. He tells it about his family and his friends. and how his family and friends always keep him grounded, as well as his faith, and that he just plays golf as a profession, you know, and he does it in front of the public. But that's not where he values or bases his life. As far as golf is concerned, it's the other stuff. And I just think that's very refreshing to hear from a guy that is such a great talent, number one player in the world. And yeah, he's doing it the right way.
Yeah, it's just fun to watch, really fun to root for. You know, another good guy, and a guy that, look, you heard Scotty talk about how tough it was. We had a chance to catch up to Tony Finau, and I legit still think Tony's a contender at the Masters. We had a chance to visit with him after his first round, and he was playing with Phil Mickelson, and Michael Bamberger jumped in on some of the interview with us as well. Here is Tony Finau after round number one, talking about some of the conditions out there, as well as him playing with Phil Mickelson. Here with Tony Finau after a blustery opening round. Just talk about how difficult it was to judge the wind out there.
Yeah, I felt like the last five holes it really picked up. It's starting to really blow right now, so it's not only hard on the shots because of the elevation. You know, 15, I thought that second shot was about as hard as it gets. You know, swirling up there, you're hitting from, you know, I'm 225 out, you're elevated 10 yards down, so I was happy to finish with, you know, an under par round on a day that I thought was getting pretty tricky out there on the back.
Bobby Jones said momentous decision on 13, and you hit it out of the pine straw.
Yeah.
Up there on the green, made a nice birdie to get you under par. Walk us through that shot a little bit.
Yeah, so I had a clear swing, and I had a good lie out of the pine straw. I actually thought it was easier to go for the green than it was to lay up, because I had to finish something right of the hole. You know, the fairway slopes hard right to left if you lay up. And so I had to take a pretty nice swing to curve it enough to go right. So in my mind, it was actually not a bigger risk, I think, as maybe it looked. You know, I thought the easier shot was just to go ahead and hit it hard to get it over the water. So, I mean, it was a great shot.
Yeah,
you know, I pulled it off, but I did think it was the play every time, because it would have been easy to lay that up in the water, because I wasn't going to be able to swing hard enough to curve it.
Right.
So I was like 195 front, you know, 215 hole, and you're like, all right, we'll give this a shot. So it was a nice momentum change.
Compare straw notes at all? You know, he had a shot up there.
Yeah, his shot's a little more famous than mine, but he told me it was a great shot. I mean, Phil's always been great to play with. He's always giving out compliments if you hit good shots and things. So it's been a while since I played with Phil. Obviously, he's on live and I'm on the tour, so it's good to be with him again.
Yeah, when you see the course in really challenging conditions with a guy who's played it so often so well, can you pick up something from how, I know he's lefty and all, but similar length, can you pick up something from him that you can apply to your own game?
Yeah, 100%. I think you're always picking up things no matter how many times you've played it. You know, I think even though it's the same golf course as, and we all know it very well, you know, there's little things I think that you continue to learn from it. And I definitely kept my eye out for different shots that Phil was hitting just to see how he plays the golf course. He obviously knows it very well. But I think you're always learning around this place, no matter how many times you've played it.
So any one moment you could isolate with Phil that you saw something today, it's like, wow, that's pretty cool.
Well, he hit a couple drives, like 3 and 8. I thought to me, it was just more like, wow, this dude still got it in the tank. You know, he drove it through the green on 3.
Yeah.
And then he flies the bunker on 8 by 20 yards, you know. So when he wants it, he's got it. And at his age, me and Sepp were talking more amongst ourselves. At his age, it's quite impressive. You know, I think people almost forget what he did here last year to finish second place. I think he shot 64 or 65 or something on Sunday. So, but you can see it. You know, you can see his short game is still magical and great with the flat stick, and he hits it far. So, I mean, who knows how many more years he's going to be able to contend here. I think he's going to be like Freddie, where he's going to be well into the 60s, still competing out here because he hits it so far.
Can you talk about that par save on 14 from behind the green with that lie? I mean, how crazy is that shot?
Yeah, that's the one Phil gave me a nice thumbs up. You know, I think whenever he gives you a thumbs up on a short game shot, you know you pulled off a good one. So the ball usually just doesn't stay there. You know, I caught a flyer out of that first cut.
Yeah.
It flew over the green, but it's on a pretty steep slope. I'm just expecting that to come down just a whole different shot. It's actually quite makeable from there, but end up staying on a down slope on a tight lie, and the best play was to fly it on the green. I just told myself, don't chicken out and hit the right shot, you know. don't play the bump here when you know you can get it close. So it was a great little flop chip, and I checked it up there within a foot. So that was huge momentum after coming off 13 with the birdie, and then I thought I played nicely on the whole back nine, you know, 10 11 and 12, after I didn't have anything to show as far as under par on the front, where I feel like I played some good golf and just made a couple dumb bogeys. getting through 12, 10, 11, and 12, and even par, I thought was huge because then I could take advantage of 13 and 15, maybe 16. So, but overall, I think under par was a solid go around there today.
And you're happy with your putting, especially with some good par saves down the stretch?
Yeah, 100%. 14 and 16 I thought were huge, yeah. No question about it. Yeah. So it's going to give me some confidence. You know, I think 17, I made a four-footer after hitting a bad putt the first one, you know. So you definitely keep that in the memory bank as you go into tomorrow.
All right, best of luck. Thanks.
Thanks.
Thanks, bud.
Thanks.
All right, that was Tony Finau after his first round. And I thought it was good just to get some context there as to how difficult it was. You could actually hear the wind blowing the trees behind us as we were talking. And, you know, that shot and some of the shots that he had to hit and the way it challenged. You know, one of the questions I asked Scotty Scheffler was, you know, on Saturday, I believe it was how did the wind, give me an example of how the wind affected your shot. And he kind of laughed and goes, you want me to take you through all of them? And, you know, it was that kind of a week, Bob, where it was challenging. Yeah. And yet these guys had to adapt. And at that point in time, Tony was right there in it. A one under par was a great score, as he said, coming in there. It just didn't go his way the rest of the week.
Well, and that's right around the time that the wind started, really started to pick up, you know, in the 30, 35 mile an hour range. You know, he said those last five holes were really, really difficult. So he got in with one under par, like Bryson got in with seven under par, that kind of thing. So what happened in the second round was difficult for him because he was right in the midst of the heavy winds, and most of those guys were. So when something like that happens, it exposes some little flaws that are in your game. And it makes things a lot more difficult to get the ball around the golf course. And unfortunately, Tony didn't play well in the second round or the fourth round. But the third round, you know, nice even par 72.
Yeah, no doubt about it. He mentioned Phil Mickelson. What's your thoughts on Phil? How much longer can Phil go around? I mean, he mentioned it. He still hits it a long ways. So can he be like Freddie Couples out there continuing to play Augusta for several more years?
You know, I think he'll play it as long as he can play it. I think, you know, we'll see him make cuts like Freddie did, you know, well into his later 50s and early 60s. And I, you know, people love seeing Phil. They love him being there. They love their Masters champions, and they applaud for their Masters champions just like they did for Tiger this year as well.
Yeah. Hey, listen, we got more from Tony Finau after his last round. I mean, you can hear the disappointment. He talked about what it was like out there in that final round and what he can maybe take out of it, which, you know, I'm not sure he was ready to kind of go there just yet, but you'll hear more from Tony. Plus, Scotty Scheffler on the strategy that he took around that golf course and how he had to keep the pedal down. Some really good stuff from the champion coming up as we continue our Masters recap edition. You're listening to Real Golf Radio.
You're listening to Real Golf Radio. Talking golf with Brian Taylor and Bob Casper.
One day you'll get it.
Here's Brian and Bob.
Welcome back to Real Golf Radio. Brian Taylor, Bob Casper. This segment brought to you in part by Black Desert Resort. Go to blackdesertresort.com. Find out about exclusive real estate opportunities in this resort that, of course, features the Tom Weisskopf Championship Design Golf Course, which will host the PGA Tour and the FedEx Cup Fall event this October, as well as the LPGA coming up in May of 2025. Resort opens later this year. Get in while you can. blackdesertresort.com. That's blackdesertresort.com. Incidentally, blackdesertevents.com will get you to the tour event information, including ticket sales, hospitality opportunities, and volunteer information as well. Check out blackdesertevents.com for those details. We mentioned talking with Tony Finau after his round, and just wanted to play this. It was gracious of him to come out. I think this is a good attitude and will be a segue into more Scotty Scheffler talk. Here's Tony after his he finished round four at Augusta.
What's up, guys?
Yeah, no worries.
Hey, Tony, thanks for your time. Tell us a little bit about the golf course today and how has it evolved over this week?
Yeah, I pretty much played like how, you know, how I expected it to. It was tough. The greens were really firm, and well, most of them. Some of them were surprisingly soft, but most of the greens are really firm. I think the last handful of holes, it's going to be fun to watch. You know, I think as these guys come down the stretch after playing it and knowing it's only going to get firmer, it's going to get real interesting there at the end. So you never know what's going to happen. That's the great thing about Augusta National. I think no matter how the golf course is playing, but especially when it's playing like this, a lot of things can happen on the back nine. So didn't have the week that I wanted, but I look forward to watching and see how these guys finish up.
like you said, didn't have the week that you wanted, but what's your schedule like between now and the PGA Championship?
Yeah, I'm playing next week, and then 2 weeks off, and then Wells Fargo and the PGA.
Cool.
So, yeah, I got a couple events, big events, signature events coming up. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to those.
Awesome.
Seventh time playing the Masters. It's always a learning experience. What do you take away from this week?
Yeah, well, still fresh off of not a very good round, so hard to know what I'm going to take from the week right now. Yeah. But overall, I leave always with gratitude. You know, I know how far I've come. I know how far my game has come. And, you know, one of these years I strongly believe is going to be mine, and I have to keep believing that, you know. So that's at the end of the day. You know, you got to believe in yourself before it happens. So I've always believed that I'm, you know, capable of winning major championships, plural. Yep. And I just keep working hard, and I've known that I can play at the highest level and compete at the highest level. I've shown myself that, and this week I wasn't able to do it, but I continue to believe that it'll happen, and a lot of years in front of me. So
fun playing in the last round with your buddy, John.
Oh, yeah, it was awesome. We both told each other on the last hole, you know, we miss playing with each other and competing with each other, so we don't know what the future holds, but it's always nice to see it with him.
Yeah.
There you go. That was Tony afterwards. I just like that he expressed, gratitude, you know, that he was appreciative of his opportunity and also maintained self-belief. Look, if you're not going to believe in yourself, nobody else will, right? There's going to be a lot of people that'll say, hey, you know, big game Tony, what happened? Shooting 80, you know, in the final round of the Masters. But I think the same conversation could be had with Rory McIlroy. You don't lose, you know, just because you don't, coming off a miscut last year for Rory and was really, really never in contention this year, doesn't mean you write it off and lose the belief that you can make it happen. And so I just thought that perspective I thought was really, really good. And Scotty seems to maintain that perspective, although he's doing it through winning, which makes it a little more fun,
right.
But still perspective nonetheless.
Well, you know, Tony's a great talent. He's proven that he can play really well on this golf course. It was difficult conditions. This is probably, other than the year that Zach Johnson won at plus one, this is probably some of the most difficult conditions I've seen with wind and that kind of thing, and not getting any moisture, so to speak, except for that little bit on Thursday morning. But, you know, Tony loves this place. He loves Augusta National. He has great feelings around Augusta National. He feels he can win at Augusta National, and I think he can too. I'm excited to see the future for Tony Finau as he continues to play at the Masters.
I think one of the things that you need to do is just kind of unlock how to play the golf course. And when you know, you got Tony with, what did I say? He had 10 birdies on the week and no eagles compared to Scottie Scheffler with 20 birdies and an eagle. I mean, that's significantly, behind. And I think what you see with Scheff is that he's unlocked it, whether it's that book that he got from Carl or just the study that he's done, or the caddying from Ted Scott, or whatever it is, he seems to have found it. And I love this interview that he did in his post round. And our friend Ann Liguori asked him this question: if he took time to enjoy the lead. And this was the way he described that, and then went into, you know, what his mindset was coming down the stretch, including being aggressive.
Enjoy the lead? No. I think just like any human would, your mind starts to wander a little bit out there on the golf course. I mean, we're out there for, you know, 4 or 5 hours at a time. You know, you got to let your mind wander. I tried to soak in stuff around me today. I looked up at the trees at times. I looked up at the fans occasionally and tried to soak in, you know, some of their energy, but did not ever let myself get attached to the lead. I just tried to keep pushing. I mean, I think if I would have played a little bit defensively, it would have been a significantly different finish. You know, I went for the green and two on 13, was able to make birdie. I attacked the pin on 14, was able to make birdie. Went for it again on 15, was able to make a nice par, and I hit a really good shot there into 16 to make birdie. And so, you know, if I was just trying to play for pars the whole back nine, I would have been standing there on 18 having to make par and hoping Ludwig would only make a par. Around this golf course, you have to stay aggressive. You have to hit the right shots. There's no way around it out here. You can't play too defensive and you can't play too aggressive. You just got to hit the right shots. And fortunately, today I was able to do that.
Just hit the right shots, Bob, and that's all you got to do.
Yeah, and that from the guy who is the ultimate ball striker, the guy who leads the categories, or is right up there at the top of the categories with iron shots and ball striking and, you know, driving off the tee. You know, that's a huge weapon for him. He said he was hitting it and he was swinging at it harder on some of those holes because he was trying to get the ball further down there for iron shots into the greens. But then when you start to add in the putting, the tutelage that he's gotten with his putting, he's looking at a lot of rounds and a lot of holes where he's hit the ball relatively close, and now he can start converting those, and that's what he was able to do, and that's why he won by four shots.
You know, I also had a chance to ask him a question, and so if you do get called on and you get a chance to ask the question, you might as well throw it out there.
Scotty, you seem like you're in total control right now of your game, in the zone, whatever it might be. How do you feel out there, and do you feel like you're playing your best golf right now?
I feel like I'm playing really good golf right now. I feel like I'm in control of my emotions as I've ever been, which is a good place to be. I feel like I'm maturing as a person on the golf course, which is a good place to be. I think it's hard to argue with the results of the last few weeks. I've been playing some really nice golf, but I really try not to focus too much on the past. I'm going to go home and reflect on this week and soak it in as best I can. But, you know, like I said, it's not a very satisfying sport because I'm supposed to tee it up again on Thursday. So back to the grind pretty quick.
I think that's really interesting, and appreciate Scotty answering that question. But it's interesting because, you know, this, that last part, you know, this, it's yeah. Not a very satisfying sport. And he had said that in another question as well. He's got to go tee it up yeah. again. So it's not like you, I think is what he's alluding to is like, if you win the Super Bowl, you just celebrate that for a while and you have an off season. In golf, you just turn around and do it again the next week.
Yeah. My dad always used to say that the game of golf is very interesting because it teaches you a lot about life. You know, you're at the top of the pinnacle 1 week, being the best player in a major championship or a PGA Tour event or whatever, and you're an also-ran the next week. So, you know, it's just the nature of the game. It's an individual sport. And, you know, if you're going to be good, you got to really work at it and be consistent in what you're doing.
One of the other big stories this week was Max Homa, and I think he gained a lot of fans. He already had a lot of fans, but I think he gained even more. Here's what he said. It's a little bit tough to hear from the podium there in the quick quote area after his round. And, of course, he obviously it was something he wanted to win. Here's what he said.
It's bittersweet, I guess, because I feel accomplished, but I feel like it doesn't really mean anything in the grand scheme of things. But I just feel like I learned. I feel like I took a big leap. You know, the rhetoric on me, and this is from myself as well, is I have not performed in these things. And I performed for all 4 days. I didn't throw a 65 in there and sneak my way in. I had to sleep on this every single day, this feeling and kind of this monkey on my back. So for me, I think it'll change some things, and then in other ways, it'll change nothing at all.
I mean, he's like the Yogi Berra of golf right now. I mean, in some ways, it's going to change things for me, and in other ways, it won't change anything at all. I feel accomplished, and at the same time, it didn't mean anything. You know, I think what he's trying to say is he's trying to sort it out and say, look, it's an important step for me. It's an important process that I have to go through. It's a self-belief. It's seeing myself and understanding it and experiencing it. Bob, you know this. Experiencing yeah. the fact, like he said, I didn't shoot a 65 and sneak in a top five finish. You know, I was in contention and had to feel that all week long through all four rounds.
Well, and the other thing is he's building on some momentum because he had a top 10 at the Open Championship last fall. And then comes out here at Augusta and finishes, you know, right up there, tied for third. So a lot of these things are developmental. A lot of these things help you forge your, I guess, abilities to be able to handle pressure and play really, really good golf. I'm reminded of Paul Azinger telling us that being on a Ryder Cup forges major champions. Well, he was on a Ryder Cup last fall also, and here he jumps right into the mix in the first major of the Masters. I expect him to play well in all the rest of the majors this year as well.
Yeah, I mean, you have to go through it. You have to go through that, and I guess I'm really starting to appreciate the introspective of Max Homa and wishing him the best. Colin Morikawa, tough day for him as well. Coming up next, Jeff Babineau will join us, and we'll break all this down. We'll continue with our recap of the 88th Masters. You're listening to Real Golf Radio.
Now, to Real Golf Radio with Brian Taylor and Bob Casper.
All right, thanks again for joining us here. Looking back at the 88th Masters Tournament, Brian Taylor, Bob Casper, and joined now by our good friend. He's a veteran golf journalist. He was covering the Masters for the Masters Annual and the Masters Journal. Jeff Babineau joins us right now. Babs, how's it going, man?
Hello, gentlemen. It's going well.
So we've talked about a few things today, and I find it interesting when you look at the ratings were down, and Scottie Scheffler sort of walked in the park coming down the stretch, if you will, that there's some people that are disappointed in that. I think there's obviously excitement when it's back and forth down the stretch they come, but I think it's pretty rare where you see a number one player in the world that's expected to win, that actually goes on to win and performs in just exactly how everybody expects him to, and just to sprinkles greatness all on us and we get to witness it. To me, that's actually really special. Maybe it lacks a little drama down the last couple of holes, but I thought it was super cool. I was just curious what your thoughts were on how this one all worked, finished out.
Yeah, I mean, you have to go back to 2005 when you had a pre-tournament favorite who actually won. So it's not easy to do. And that, you know, that was Tiger. You look at Scheffler now, twice has been number one and won a green jacket. The only other guy to do that twice was Tiger. So, you know, you're throwing Scottie Scheffler in a lot of sentences with Tiger Woods these days. But I'm with you. I mean, I was kind of buckling up for this wild, close finish with all these guys, you know, firing, and, you know, the second nine on Sunday at Augusta when we see the eagles and birdies and all that stuff. And, I mean, you had three big mistakes from these guys. I mean, four if you got an extra double from Morikawa, and Scheffler doing all the right things, and all of a sudden you had this runaway. So it just, I think the ending was a little shocking to the system, because I think you expect, or I did at least, I expected to see this really go down to the wire and look so good with 10 holes left. And we had a kind of a walk away.
You know, what's kind of interesting also is that, you know, it was a walk away, but it was close for a lot of the front nine, especially after the ninth hole. And then Scottie Scheffler made what, three or four birdies on the back nine and shot three under par. I was every time he went for the green on 13 and 15, I was like sitting at the front of my seat. My stomach was churning. I was nervous for him and everything. And he just went about it like normal business.
Yeah, I mean, they had a decision to make on 13, right? It would have been odd to see him lay up with them. They had a little 200 and change to the front. And Ted Scott told him, you know, hey, man, yeah, we're going for it. Do what you do. I mean, that's what he does. You're the best ball striker in the world. So, you know, they did what they did. He makes the birdie there, 14, he makes birdie. And you know, then he's just pulling away at that point. We're figuring out who might win second, but as close as that was, you know, you had four guys tied on the first nine. Four guys tied for lead on Sunday, which is really exciting. And in the end, you have when Åberg finishes four back, and the rest of the guys are at least seven back. So it's just kind of amazing how Scottie's one of those guys that has that gear and just slowly can pull away. And he just does all the right things. I kind of roll my eyes when I hear people call him boring. I mean, if you're bored watching him play golf, you're kind of bored with greatness, because he really does it in a special way. He doesn't make the mistakes. He's such a high golf IQ. And when he gets the putter going, he's proven right now, he's pretty unbeatable right now.
So, Jeff, when you and to your point, what you're saying there is this is a guy that's racked up nine wins, a pair of Masters, a pair of Players, a pair of APIs, pair in Phoenix. I mean, he's racked up all these wins, and he's racking them up at certain places. And that sure sounds a lot like a guy that won 82 times recently in Tiger Woods, sort of had his places, and he dominated and did what he needed to do. He's like he's unlocked this code, and he's won early. And all this has been in the last, what, 3.5 years, which is just it's crazy.
Yeah, started 22, right? So less than that. Yeah, it's pretty amazing. The one stat that kind of hit me coming out is I think they threw out a stat that Scottie hasn't won after the Masters.
Right.
So if you think about it, like the year he won in 22, the Masters was his fourth win. This time it was his third win. So his seasons have kind of been you know, front load of wins in Phoenix, stuff like that. So that's kind of interesting. So you want to see him. Certainly he played well enough on the back end of last year to win a few times, and just, you know, he had some poor putting weeks or kind of off putting weeks. So, you know, he does so many things great. I think his putting really stands out when he's not knocking down all these 12 footers, but he's looking at them all day. So he's not going to knock them all down. And certainly he made big putts, right? He made the big putt at 8. That was huge. He didn't have to putt at 9. He almost holds it for 2. And then he makes a big putt at 10. So he's making, you know, he made the big putt at 13 a day earlier when he's kind of spinning his wheels a little bit early on that second 9. So he makes, if he doesn't make all the, you know, 6 footers he's looking at, he makes a lot of big, pivotal, momentum-keeping putts. And that's the sign of a really good player.
So, you know, he's gonna be going through some changes here pretty soon with his family, with his wife having a baby, that kind of thing. How do you think that's going to affect him, good or bad, as far as his game's concerned?
Yeah, I mean, I tell you what, I'm really impressed with Scheffler and how, I think the word Rory used talking about him was uncluttered. And I really think he keeps it simple. You look at the guys who finished first and second last week, and they're two of the guys who keep the game as simple as you possibly could keep it, right? I mean, Scotty's seen the same swing guy since he was 7 years old, Randy Smith. He's not messing around with swings and this and that. And it was a big deal for them to welcome Phil Kenyon onto the team to help with the putting. That was a big move because it was always just Scotty and Randy. And Abra reminds me of the same. I mean, he's just such a refreshingly simple guy. They don't get in their own way. And then you got a guy like Rory, who's got all the talent in the world, and he's wondering how he's going to come into the tournament. This year he's going to practice more. This year he's going to play leading in. Next year he isn't. He's the last guy to register. You know, if you notice, his caddy wore number 89. That means they registered even after Akshay Bhatia, who won the previous Sunday. So, you know, you can overthink it sometimes. And I just like the way that some of these guys who are playing best, the message all these other players should get is they don't make it that complicated. So in the end, it's just golf. And to Scottie Scheffler, it's just golf. It's a big tournament, but next week's a big tournament too. They're all big to him. And I love the way that he keeps it like that, and he's ready to go again today.
Jeff Babineau joining us here on Real Golf Radio. So you mentioned Rory. He was a big story coming in. 10 years, his opportunity to complete the career Grand Slam. The PGA Championship returns to Valhalla, the last place he won a major championship. What is your take on Rory? And, you know, Tiger says without a doubt Rory's going to get that Masters. But, you know, that's somebody that has respect for him. And what else would Tiger say at this point? But yeah. What do you expect? I mean, how small is that window starting to look at this point?
Well, I mean, I guess it gets a little smaller every year, right? I mean, he puts a lot of pressure on himself, but I've always maintained, I try to take the long game view on it. I always maintain he's going to get it somewhere. I mean, look at some of, you know, you look at Olafable won 2 Masters, one of them after he pretty much was done with golf. Marco Mira won one at 41. Right. Maybe when the expectations are a little less for him, that's when he's going to step through the door and do it, you know. And I expect him to get right back in the major mix back in Valhalla. He's going to have good feelings there, winning in 14. Yeah, you know, that was a great run he had when he won the Open Championship, and I think he won maybe at Firestone and won at Valhalla right in a row. And at the time, I remember him talking, he was hitting balls one day, getting all tangled up, and at the time it just registered in his head, just look at your target and go. And he just simplified things and went on this big 3 tournament run. So, you know, everything's in there. It's all inside him. You just got to kind of bring it out and stop getting in his own way. And, you know, the driver will be a good weapon at Valhalla, as it is with a lot of these guys. And Rory will get back in there. And he'll get his major. He'll get the Masters one of these days. But the place just, it's one of those places that can keep you at arm's length for a while. And some guys that never did give in. And so I think he will get it, but it's just never going to be easy.
What do you think the ceiling is? Like you see, you were talking about Oberg and how simply he makes things. What do you think his ceiling is, considering just a year ago, he was 3,000 in the world. He just graduated from college. He's won two or three times now, and he's like ninth or eighth in the world. How fast did that happen? And what do you think going forward is that going to be like for him?
I think that kid's got the world ahead of him, really. I mean, he looks awesome. He's, you know, played in the Ryder Cup before he played in the major. Just hugely impressive. His driver is such a weapon. I'm watching him at Harbortown today, hit driver on all these holes and skinny corridors. And just, I think he hit eight or nine fairways. I mean, it's such a weapon. And he's got a great ceiling, but I've always, you got to kind of put a throttle on it a little bit, because you look at just last fall, this game is fleeting, right? The form is fleeting. Victor Hovland's going to be the next number one in the world, really. I mean, he's on that trajectory. And now where is he? He's just a kid up there that's completely lost. I mean, he's messed around with a lot of things he's having success with, and he's lost right now, and he'll find it. But that golf puts you through those spells. So it's hard to, you know, you want to sit here and say Scottie Scheffler's going to win 5 and 6 green jackets, and who knows, he might. But who knows what his form's going to be in 24 months too. So it's just, golf's like that. When you're playing as well as he is and hitting the ball the way he is and on this great run, you better take advantage of it, because it sure can leave you fast.
Yeah. Hey, Babs, I know we're short on time, but I wanted to ask you about Tiger, because, you know, he gets the 24 consecutive cuts and makes it to the weekend, and then obviously not what we're used to seeing out of Tiger Woods. What's your feeling on him? And, you know, his comments afterwards were probably as honest and as I've ever heard him at all, when he talks about finishing basically last of those that made the cut and saying it was a good week and, you know, something to build on and that kind of thing. I mean, you would never hear him say that before. Where is he at right now in your mind, and what should the fans expect from Tiger going forward?
Well, I think he liked the fact that he played 4 rounds. I know that. But, I mean, yeah, finishing dead last at the Tiger Woods is not where you want to be. And I can't think he enjoys that. I think it's cool that he brought Charlie up there and got to share Sunday on the practice area with him. But he doesn't want to finish 60th. That's not how he's built. He's not built as a ceremonial guy. You know, Arnold could do it. Arnold could play and smile with the crowd and wave and enjoy it. I don't see Tiger doing that. I don't think Jack ever enjoyed doing that, showing up when he wasn't going to be real competitive. So I don't know how long Tiger will want to do this. Maybe he wants to keep his game fresh to give the Champions Tour a run in a couple of years and give that a little stretch, right? I mean, he can ride around the cart, really do some damage out there, and really have a huge effect on that tour. So I don't know how long he wants to stay at these majors and finishing 60th. I can't imagine he'd want to do that too long.
Yeah, no question. He did say he loves it still, which is something. Hey, last thing on the ratings. What was your thoughts with the ratings being down? Do you think that's just a way that, you know, people are digesting media these days differently than just regular television? Or do you think this is some fatigue on the fans' part with all this, you know, fracturing of professional golf?
Yeah, I think it's a little of both. It's a big combination. It's almost like, you know, why do players hit it so far these days? And you want to, you know, a lot of people just point to a golf ball when it's, they're in better physical shape, they're better physical specimens, the turf is firmer. There's all kinds of reasons that go into it besides a singular thing. And I think that's, you know, without studying it a whole lot, but just kind of the feel you have, I think it's a little bit fractured right now at the top of golf. That turns some people off. And I do think, as you say, it's how people consume this, right? I mean, I finally got with the times and cut the cord a couple of weeks ago, and I watch things differently now. People are watching on Masters.com. I don't know how you're credited with things like that. And there's 9 million channels on television and options and streaming options. So I think people, how they consume things is different. But I do think partly it's the fan that's a little tired of golf being messed up at the top. It's zooming everywhere else, and it's not great at the top right now until they figure things out. So that's the message to them, to get this thing figured out sooner than later.
Yeah, I think you're right. By the way, what was your favorite sandwich this year at Augusta?
I went with an early chicken salad just for a little change of pace, but my egg salad's the go-to.
Yeah. That chicken salad's not bad, though, huh?
Chicken salad's not good.
Bad. A couple of hot dogs here and there, but the...
Really?
You know, the pimento cheese at the end of my bench, he never gets called into the game. I'm an egg salad guy, you know.
I'm with you on that.
I'm faithful.
I'm with you. So you actually did some hot... You know, I've never done a hot dog there.
Yeah, I threw a couple hot dogs. Throw a little... Got to have some relish on. Not as good as the ballpark, but you got to mix it up. I'm here for like 14 days. Got to mix it up a little.
No doubt.
Well, you're the best, man. It was so good to see you as always. It's a pleasure to be there in that same room with you, and a nice job on good work. And we'll catch up with you again at Valhalla.
Great to see you, boys. And thanks for giving me a nice little Masters hoodie I wear around and think of you guys every time I put it on.
Oh, see, it's worth it right there. That's all we ask for. A little thought from you. Well, that's some good Babs karma coming our way, so we like
it. That's right.
All right.
Play the lottery.
Good stuff. Thanks, Jeff. We'll talk to you soon, man.
Okay. All right, guys.
All right. There you go. That's Jeff Babineau joining us here. He's writing for the Masters Annual and the Masters Journal. And he's just a good guy. He's got good questions, very astute, and, you know, does a nice job with his interview and his writing. So check him out on the Masters Annual, Masters Journal, masters.com. That's going to do it for us. It's been a fun Masters recap edition of Real Golf Radio. Thanks again to Jeff Babineau. Thanks to the caddy for joining us. Thanks to Tony Finau for giving us some time, even after what wasn't his best round out there. But hopefully you enjoyed that. Congratulations to Scottie Scheffler, a two-time Masters champion. For Dave Glauser and Bob Casper, I'm Brian Taylor. We'll see you next week right here on Real Golf Radio.